Hello and welcome to another Sustainable Wine podcast with me, Hannah Holmari. For today's Sustainable Wine Roundtable member interview, I'm joined by Carlos de Gisps, who is the Director of Marketing and Communications at Amarim Cork in Portugal. So, Carlos, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
So, Amarim is the largest producer and supplier of cork stoppers worldwide, and I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with your products. But perhaps you could give us a quick introduction and tell us a bit more about the company.
Amarim Cork is a 153-year-old company. So we are the oldest cork company in continuous operation, and we are also the largest. We made 6.1 billion stoppers last year. And that, of course, is a significant number of bottles, which means it's a very significant responsibility that we have, but we welcome that responsibility quite happily.
Cork is often referred to as one of the most sustainable materials in the world. Tell us why that is. How does the harvesting of cork contribute to environmental, economic, and social sustainability?
Cork has been used since the ancient Egypt. That's the oldest archaeological records that we have for the utilization of cork. And it has been used ever since. Today, of the roughly 20 billion bottles that are filled and stopped with something along the world, about 13.2 billion of those are cork. So that it creates a significant value-added chain that makes a native cork oak species that belongs in the Western Mediterranean since 40 to 45 million years ago a very, very competitive crop. Crucial when you talk about sustainability is to create this kind of value added for native crops. Most of the problems that we have when it comes to certain forest management and everything that goes along with it has to do with the fact that invasive species are often a lot more profitable than native species. Cork and wine and spirits also, and beer, it must be said, contributes to create a value added chain that really makes the difference. And when you talk about sustainability, we should not talk just about CO2. CO2, it is important. And we have great news to share with the wine industry because every single one of the 15 or 16 life cycle assessments that we have performed in our product, all of them have delivered a negative carbon footprint. That is very important. But let's not forget, Hannah, that we could fix the CO2 problem today. And tomorrow, the world would still wake up with a huge sustainability problem. So we need to talk about issues that have to do with water management. Terribly important. We're not talking anywhere near enough about that. Biodiversity. The cork oak forests are one of the 36 hotspots of biodiversity around the world. If you think of some of the other 35, you'll be thinking of places as mythical as Borneo, Costa Rica, the Amazon. That's the kind of wealth that we have here. A wealth that does not belong just to Portugal, which of course is the largest producer of cork. And also, I think we must not forget that if you really want to balance people, planet, and partnerships, you obviously must not forget the creation of well-paid agricultural jobs. And harvesting cork at €160 per day, it is the best-paid agricultural job anywhere in the world. Of course, it only lasts 3 months, but that injection of cash that families make during June, July, and August when harvest takes place, that's absolutely fundamental to fix people to the land. The rest of the year, they'll be making less money, of course. But imagine, and to make the math easier on all of us, €100 a day, even multiplied by three or four members of a family, multiplied by 3 months, that powerful injection of cash is going to prevent that family from pick up and moving to another city. Because let's face it, all the cities in the world have more than enough people, and all the countryside in the world does not have enough people. We need to create these well-paid agricultural jobs, and wine has a direct, measurable, demonstrable contribution to that unique and unbeatable sustainability story that it's called Cork.
So, thinking a bit more about ecosystem preservation more widely, can you tell me what kind of initiatives Amarim is engaged in to promote the conservation and restoration of oak forests and biodiversity on a larger scale?
Well, you don't need to conserve. Not in the traditional sense of the word when you talk about conservancy and forest, because let's not forget that the departure base is completely different. We never cut down the cork oak. Cork oaks live for 200 years and are harvested 15, 17, 18 times in their lifetime. So the departure base is actually a bit counterintuitive because we all grew up understanding that you want to save trees, you do not use products made out of trees because you need to cut down. Quark, as I said, it's not intuitive in the sense that you want to say this unique 40 to 45 million year old core porous of Western Mediterranean. If you want to save that, you need to use core product, because that is what makes the crop interesting for the thousands and thousands of raw material providers that we have. So conservancy here is more about generating the value added that will prevent invasive crops from taking over land that should be allocated to those native species.
And how long does it take for cork trees to grow until they can be harvested to produce the cork that can then be used for bottle stoppers? Because from what I know, there's quite a significant time lag. Is that right?
It is a very significant time lag. You cannot touch a cork oak, and cork oaks have been protected in some shape or form in Portugal since the 11th, since the 12th century, that there is this perception that it is indeed a special tree and certainly a special oak. But you cannot touch a cork oak until about 25 years have gone by. It's actually not a timeline per se. It's when a tree reaches a certain ratio defined by law, a ratio that established between the height of the tree and the circumference of that tree. When you reach that ratio, you can harvest for the first time. And this normally takes about 25 years. It could be 23, it could be 22, it could be 27. But it is basically a quarter of a century. Even after a quarter of a century, that first harvest does not give you cork good enough to make pretty much anything out of it, and certainly not wine stopper. By law, you cannot go back to that tree until at least 9 years, minimum 9 years have gone by. Second harvest, and you still don't have cork good enough to make natural cork stopper. Another 9 years. So off the bat, even the humblest of the wines with the humblest of the cork will have 100% natural stopper that benefited from almost half a century, 25 plus 9 plus 9, 43 years of growth and care. So if you look at that from an asset management point of view, if you approach someone today and say, well, you know what, Hannah, I have a great business idea for you. You're going to literally and figuratively dig a hole in the ground, pour a lot of money into it, cover it, and we're going to wait 43 years. It's going to be a short meeting. One of the great sustainability stories of the world happens, exists, because that kind of quote-unquote crazy decision were made by someone 50, 80, 100 years ago. We are all collectively benefiting from those, again, quote-unquote crazy decisions. If you want to have sustainability in the snapshot, I think that gives you a very good view of it.
Thinking about this again from the economic perspective, do you see a lot of farmers shifting to invest in other crops with faster financial gains? For example, I recently read that Portugal's national forestry inventory shows that the country's cork forests have declined in size by 3.6% between 1995 and 2015. So I don't know if you have a more recent statistic, but is this still the trend? And does that shift have something to do with it?
It has been threatened by other non-native intensive crops. Yes, absolutely. A lot of it has to do also with territorial management. So if you get the inside of the country depopulated, then there's not going to be a lot of people there to manage forests. So what you tend to do is to plant something that will grow, and you don't have to worry about. And after 9 years or 12 years, you cut it down, and you do that 3 or 4 times, and then the soil is pretty much gone. But we'll deal with that later. So what was necessary to do? And remember, you're also talking about statistics that refer to a time when pork was not enjoying the renaissance that cork has been enjoying now. We still felt that memory very, very keenly, the need to demonstrate that, again, native species ought to be more competitive, or at least as competitive as other species, invasive species. We like to say that we are the global leader of cork and all that. Of course, it's true, but that does not mean just putting out press releases saying that. It also means, as in this case, spending 58 million euros over the last 34 months or so, who, for the first time in our history, something that is fundamental, acquire cork forests. We have never done that. We, to cork forests, traditionally do not own cork land. We buy our cork raw material from the thousands of suppliers, thousands of property owners that I was telling you about. But we wanted to demonstrate that it can be done, that you can remain competitive. But for that, we also understood that a few things need to be changed. It's not realistic in this day and age. Very romantic. It's very right, but let's be pragmatic. Let's be realistic. And really, how many people are going to wait half a century for an asset to mature nowadays? Not that many. So we engaged with a couple of local universities in a research and development project that took many, many years. And about 2 years ago, we put it literally onto the ground to start reducing that initial 25-year-old cycle. Because the problem is not the 9-year cycle between harvests. That's very competitive with the vast majority of the species that you have around here. But the initial 25-year was a big oracle, big obstacle that we needed to clear. So without resorting to genetic modifications of species or anything like that, we implemented a program that basically allow us to trick the tree into thinking that resources are abundant enough that that initial growth spur can happen much faster in 10, 11, or 12 years. And we do this by basically micro-irrigating specific points of that initial cycle. It has to be very specific. Otherwise, if you use too much water, you don't know how to do it. You end up not with cork, sponge, just like us. Any of us eat too much, we ended up a little bit spongy. Well, cork, it is the same thing. We want to make sure that it's done properly, but we have now proof of concept. And those 58 million euros mean that we will be able to showcase how it can be done in the 21st century and not being just dependent of the natural regeneration. Because those statistics that you mentioned do not highlight the crucial aspect, which is the survivability rate. So as climate change happens, and cork has been very, very resilient over 45 million years. Well, yes, but we want to make sure that we're not just resilient, we're more than that, and we are able to continue the trend that we have had after those stats that you mentioned, which point out the net growth of cork forests. In fact, this project will allow us to put out about 30% growth in total output of the cork forest in Portugal. So that's why it costs a lot, so much money. But again, being a leader, sometimes it's exactly that.
You mentioned water management is, of course, crucial when we're thinking about sustainability. I'd be keen to hear just a bit more about your water management strategy as a whole.
The largest underground water reservoirs of the entire Iberian Peninsula lay precisely underneath the Corco port. And that makes sense if you remember that this is land that has not been disturbed for 100 years, 200 years or more. It's natural. That ability to regulate water cycles, that ability to prevent erosion is absolutely fundamental. You may wonder, rightly so, how come a cork oak, an oak, first of all, is able to not just to survive, but to thrive in areas that have very, very little precipitation. And remember, cork oaks are not just native to Portugal or Spain or Italy, France, Egypt, Algeria, Morocco. So we're talking about precipitations that are not huge or abundant, but that's how amazing the tree is. It has developed the evolutionary mechanisms to cope and deal with that. And one of the best ways to understand cork is actually to understand that cork is an armor to the tree, but also to understand that oaks normally don't have a dual root system. Cork oaks not only have that very deep, proverbial deep roots of a cork of an oak, it's very, very good at getting water that's even very, very deep. When you look at the cork oak, 150% of what you see is underground. You don't see the whole thing. You see a fraction of that. It's like an iceberg almost. That is more than even as icebergs, perhaps. In addition to those deep roots, they also have a very unique radial root system very close to the surface. So even the smallest amounts of precipitation are able to make their way into the tree. It's quite remarkable. It's an incredible evolutionary adaptation that the species has. But at the end of the day, that's what regulates water cycle in areas that are incredibly dry. And let's face it, probably get even drier. But again, if you've been around this life 45 million years, you've probably faced a lot of obstacles before. And to be honest with you, I think humans are going to be in trouble if we don't fix the current course. We'll be in trouble way before the cork will get in trouble.
Most of your products are FSC certified. Is that right? And what percentage of your products are certified? What percentage is this?
The percentage of FSC certified cork is nowhere near where we would like it to be. Amory was the first cork company in the world. In fact, you can argue that we're the first packaging company in the world to get FSC certification. And I like to think that we are an integral part of that effort to launch and to establish FSC certification for the cork forest, which today should be about 170,000-180,000 hectares. We have 732,000 hectares. So clearly, we still have a long way to go. We also have to be mindful that FSC certification, like many other types of certification, relies a lot on the demand from the big retail. Whenever we have, and the Sustainable Wine Roundtable has some retail members that have been very good at pushing for that certification, but whenever we have a retailer saying, okay, we want our quartz to be FSC certified, you can almost immediately see the spike in the demand, and you can certainly see a spike also in the offering of that type of product. But at the end of the day, Hannah, I have to point out one thing. The sustainability of the core forest predates FSC certification by millions of years. And the CO2 capabilities, for example, of retention of a forest do not hinge on the certification. What FSC brings onto the table, and of course it is very, very important, is like data collection and the data management system that it's very, very important. I'll give you an example that always struck me as remarkable. I remember many years ago being in a core property that had nesting from a very endangered species of eagles. And there was being a nesting site, of course, was very, very important. And there was this old guy working there for many, many years that knew exactly what that eagle was up to, where the nest was, knew everything that needed to be known about that. Very empirical knowledge about it. But if that person has an accident the next morning, all that information goes away. So FSC brings a lot more structure, a lot more predictability, a lot more ability to follow up also on key issues such as that one. It is very, very important. We want to see more, not less. And that's why our efforts have been so determinant in paying more to the people that have FSC certified quartz, and also see the retailers gladly paying a little bit more for certified quartz and dozens of wineries around the world.
And is traceability a big significant challenge in the quartz supply chain?
It is not a challenge now. It was a challenge decades ago, certainly a lot bigger than it is today. Today, you can open a bottle anywhere in the world, and if it has an amaranth cork, we'll be able to tell you from which property, and in often cases, from which quadrant of that property that particular stopper came from. And around, we make 6 billion of those. So traceability is absolutely fundamental. And besides, when you talk about FSC certification, FSC certification is based on chain of custody. So one up, one down. Without that traceability, we would not be able to do that.
I've drank my bottle of wine. What should I do now with my cork? Can all cork stoppers be recycled? And what are they recycled into?
What you shouldn't do is just chuck it into the garbage bin. Of course, if the worst thing that arrives at a landfill is a cork stopper, the world will be okay. It's not going to create, you know, an environmental hazard. That's not the case. You can rest assured about that. But we have the obligation to extend the life cycle of any product, despite the fact that in many, many cases, these cork stoppers can stay for decades and decades inside a bottle. That's good. A big, big difference vis-a-vis single-use plastic stoppers, for example. Certainly that makes a difference. But today, we have cork recycling programs in the United States, in France, which is actually the largest recycler of corks in the world, Italy, Portugal, certainly Spain, even South Africa. And what we need to do is to make sure that these products have a second, a third, or even a fourth life. I particularly like the example, Majestic, for example, the UK retailer, has a very interesting recycling project going on where they grind the corks and use them as mulch in the UK. Now, this can be used in the strawberry crops, for example, of the south of Spain, or in vineyards in England, or whatever it's necessary to help mulch. Think of the circularity of that idea, that you grind corks to protect the water cycle of the vineyards that are going to generate the wine when more corks are used. How wonderful is that? That's how circular and how sustainable cork can be.
Now, Carlos, my final question to you is on the future for cork stoppers. What does the outlook look like? Will they remain competitive against synthetic closures, which are also continuously being developed?
No doubt about it. You have to realize that exports of cork from Portugal alone, and remember, you have cork companies in Spain, in Portugal, in France, in Italy, even in Germany. But from Portugal, cork exports are growing at about 2.5 times faster rate than the growth of wine consumption around the world. You obviously know what that means. That means that the recuperation of market share is solid. It has been the case. Our year alone, we doubled about the size of our company in, 10, 12 years. Australia, until the Chinese slapped them with those tariffs, Australia had the fastest growth rate for corn anywhere in the world. Years in a row with growth rates as high as 33%. Imagine that. In the US, the market share for corn has been going up year on year for the last 10 years. And the reason why we made that very heavy investment with a long-term return on it, the 58 million euros in purchasing corn land that I was telling you about, it's because the expected growth rate for corn required more corn, better quality corn, than what we would have 20, 25, 30 years from now if nothing's done. The outlook is incredibly promising. I think the technical advances have strengthened that performance of corn that was already better than anything else. That's why 7 out of every 10 bottles today are closed with corn and not with plastic or Sruka. The reason for that is not for lack of availability of alternatives, obviously. It's because corn's technical performance was unbeatable, and it's now even more so. But also because as unbeatable as that performance is the sustainability of corn. Sustainability, as we all know at SWR, is going to be more important, not less. To have a stopper that ticks all the right sustainability boxes is absolutely important for everybody in the wine trade. People making it, the people writing about it, the people selling it, the people buying it. That's very, very important. And don't forget one thing. The consumer preference for corn is absolutely also unbeatable when it comes to any of the markets where this has been made. You have seen consumer preferences leading to a premiumization. In the U.S., for example, Nielsen data points out that amongst 100 sold brands in the U.S., the median price difference, medium, not average, the median price difference for wines on the court can be $3.87 higher than for those with artificial. I'm not talking about a great Bordeaux or the great Burgundy here selling for hundreds of thousands of euros. I'm talking about wines that cost $12, $10. That's the way that cork brings on. Wine companies do not exist to sell food. But wine companies exist to sell wine and wine at the highest possible price point with the highest possible quality. And for that, cork has had a role in the last 300 years. And I like to think we'll have a role in the next 300 also.
Well, I've certainly learned a lot about cork and its properties, and I'm sure our listeners have too. So, Carlos, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
It was a pleasure, and thank you. And thank you, the SWR, for the opportunity and for bringing up such important issues to everybody's top of mind. Thank you.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe to Sustainable Wines podcast channel and sign up on www.sustainablewine.co.uk to receive our newsletter and regular updates. And of course, if you're interested in getting involved in the SWR, please do just get in touch.